every season it gets donated, and then you see it being shipped overseas, and I'm thinking, it's just woeful waste. And seeing that was like a big wake-up call for me, and I'm like, nope. Our philosophy is that we'd rather, you know, spend more on a quality item than partake in the fast fashion.
Welcome to Milton & King's On the Wall podcast, where we engage in conversations with artists, designers, and more. In this episode, we speak with Allison Maestas, the creative director behind the brand La Semilla Casa. If you enjoy these conversations, please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Hi, Allison.
Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad.
What are you up to this morning?
Racing around, trying to get a few things done before I sat down to chat with you.
Well, thank you for chatting with me today. You're calling in from, is it Arizona?
Yes, Scottsdale, Arizona.
Scottsdale, Arizona. How do you like it there?
You know what? In the last couple of days, it's been fabulous because we've had rain. I know that California's not so thrilled with it, but we're happy to get it here for sure.
I'm actually thrilled with it. I like the rain. I mean, I know it affects different people differently. You know, if you're in the Hollywood Hills or you're in Malibu, and mudslides are a real thing, but no, it makes everything green. It makes the mountain ranges, you know, capped with snow, and
lush.
It's awesome. So yeah. So when you get rain in Scottsdale, that's like flash floods, isn't it? Or is there a danger of flash floods?
There is, mainly like in the valley in Phoenix.
Okay.
But here it's because we don't get that much rain that when it does rain, there is a lot of runoff for sure. Like our front courtyard started to fill up, but right now it's not raining, so it's got time to dry out a little. But yes, I love it. I love the rain. I think 3 days is my max. 3 days of rain, and then I'm like, okay.
I remember because I really liked Scottsdale. I've been there a few times, and it very much is that desert community, but it's very it's a very nice, I don't know if upscale is the right word, but it's just very, it feels fancy when you're there. Scottsdale feels like
I think of it as like a desert oasis. When we first moved here, my friends were saying, I'd sent them pictures of the house, and in the background's the really tall palm trees. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but you're in the desert. What's with the palm trees?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I would think of it as an oasis.
Phoenix and is the same way. There's lots of, like when my wife and I were there was lots of palm trees all over the place. It's not what you think when you think of Arizona, but.
Not at all. But Arizona in itself is there's lots of microclimates here. Like you've got a little bit of Colorado. You've got the desert. You've got the, you know. You name it.
You
there's
go
a little
up the range
bit of everything.
Flagstaff, and you're cold.
Yeah. Which is
pine trees and very green.
And you don't think of it as being that way, but
no.
Yeah. So it was surprising for me when we first moved here. I wasn't really looking forward to it. But it's
when did you first move there? How long have you been in Scottsdale?
I want to say 2018. We moved here.
So you haven't been there that long. 5 years.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, going on, and it's stacking up. It's almost time to go. When I first moved here, I was thinking to myself, it's the best kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
It was way better than what I expected, but this past summer has been brutally hot, and which is why I'm glad for the rain.
But there's a lot of rock gardens and rock lawns, I would say, in Arizona.
There are. And thankfully, our house does not have a rock garden. But having said that, we're looking at xeriscaping this coming year.
Xeriscaping. I'm not familiar with what that is.
Xeriscaping is removing the grass and...
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So we're trying to be... I feel like it's a waste of water when we're the only people in the street with lush grass And
yeah, trying to keep it green in 115 degree summer is rough.
Yeah. And so that's something that we're planning to do just for low maintenance,
mm-hmm.
making life a little easier. Yeah.
Now you said, I forgot the actual term you said, but you're thinking of moving out of Scottsdale.
We are thinking
say it was getting stale, or what did you say?
My husband and I have a serious case of wanderlust, and we have a tendency to only stay in one place for more than maybe, I think the most we stayed in one place was 8 years in Denver.
Okay.
So we're coming close, and we're looking for our next, next location for us to be.
So how long were you in Denver for?
8 years. That was the most.
Oh, that was the longest one. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
8 years there. Going on 6 years here.
Yeah, 7 years in California.
Oh, where were you in California?
We were in North County, San Diego. We were in Oceanside.
Oh, okay. I love it there.
Yeah, I loved it there as well.
How long did you say you were there for?
7 years.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, love it. Love
it.
So
what prompted the move from Oceanside to Denver? And then Denver to Scottsdale. I'm kind of curious to know what the what is either pushing you away from those areas or drawing you to a different area.
Usually, it's my husband's job.
Okay.
But in between California and Denver, we moved back to Australia for 5 years. My mother wasn't well at the time, so we packed up and went back there.
Okay.
And we made our way back to Denver, and then we came to Arizona with a job transfer with my husband. Mm. Yeah.
So his work has allowed you to kind of move around, and it sort of suited you since you got this wanderlust bug.
It has. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for him that I'm allowed to do what I do. I think without him and his assistance along the way, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. So that's a good thing. And he has a very similar mindset when it comes to what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's a great support to me. And yeah, when we first moved to California, his position there enabled me to start my own company then. He opened the doors for a lot of clients for me. So that was great, because I'd left behind a great job in Melbourne to come out to the US. That was back in, goodness, 97. So yeah, lots of back and forth traveling around, but yeah.
Now the subtle accent doesn't totally give it away, I guess, but you are from Australia. It does seem like you've lost some of your accent a little bit. So were you born and raised in Melbourne?
No, actually, we were living in Melbourne prior to us moving out to the US, but I was born in Queensland.
Okay.
And grew up in country Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the time when you're living there, you might just think, oh, it's so ho-hum. But I look back now and think, man, it was amazing, amazing start to life.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, that's where Milton and King is. They're, I guess that's considered regional.
Yeah, they're not far from where I was. Yeah, like 2-hour drive, which people might think that sounds like a long way, but it's for Australia, it is not.
Right. Lots of stuff is very spread out.
For sure. And it's not uncommon to drive an hour for dinner.
Yeah. You do that in LA, but really it's hour traffic on the freeway, and it's really about a 15-minute walk.
That's it.
Well, that's cool. So you grew up in Australia. How did you – is your husband Australian or is he American?
He has his Australian citizenship, but he was actually born in Japan.
He was
a Navy brat, and
okay, military.
Yeah, and he grew up in San Diego and moved to Australia to take a position out there with a printing company.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to get a little bit, jump into to your sort of your art background.
Mm-hmm.
Was it something that you were always doing as a kid? Was it something that you developed at some point? Were you were your parents artistic? Where did all this come from?
You think back and you think I'm the only one that's like this, but I was always drawing and sketching from a very young age. And when I wasn't drawing or sketching, I was redecorating the house, doing different things. But I think looking at my family, I think I take after my father, who was very creative.
What did he do?
He wasn't so much, he was more an engineer. He would design everything. I mean, he pretty much rebuilt the house that we grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just sit at the kitchen table with his graph paper back then and design something and then go and build it, whether it's, you know, furniture, machinery, trailers, you name it. He was very creative in that way. So I think I take after him. And then just recently we were visiting my uncle, who now is in elderly care. He's in a nursing home, and he has taken up painting. And I'm thinking, he's the resident painter. And I'm like, maybe I got it from him. I've never seen him, you know, with a paintbrush in hand before.
Yeah.
I never looked at him that way. So
interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's my guess would be from my dad's side.
Well, you know, like a lot of times people think of building and things like that almost like from an engineering perspective. A lot of times, like if you're in university, you think of the engineers as not being the creative types. They're more of like the math heads. And but there's definitely a creative aspect to building and creating, you know, machinery and physical objects.
Totally. So, yeah. It's funny because recently I was talking with my brothers about it, and my dad we used to go camping a lot growing up, and he would be very particular about how to pack the back of the car. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I was laughing with my brothers about, because we're all the same way. We're like.
Like Tetris? Like
totally. Totally. It's like I want to say to my husband, please step aside and let me do it.
Yeah.
And my brother said the same thing. So it's, you know, we've all come away with that aspect from dad. But yeah.
It's like a spatial intelligence where you can see where things are going to move, and you can flip things this way, and it just fits just right.
Totally. It's it's hilarious when you think back at it, but it's made us very hard to live with when it comes to packing cars. It's
like very particular.
Yes, terrible.
How many siblings did you have?
I have two brothers, one older and one younger.
Okay.
And they're both the math heads.
They're both the math heads.
Yeah.
Just to be very clear, math heads, not...
Not meth, no.
Yes, not meth, not math heads.
No.
They're math heads.
We're talking math, physics.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yes.
Just want to make sure I'm very clear with that.
Physics.
yes. So they don't have the creative gene. They're not drawing or painting or designing.
They have the creative gene, like we just mentioned, in a different way. They are very creative in the technical field. Yeah.
Okay.
Which
that makes sense.
Which is amazing. It's like you just said. It's like creativity shows up in different ways, and I think we're all a little creative in our own ways.
So, at what point did you? Come to the realization that maybe this, you know, you were drawing sketches as a kid and all that kind of stuff. At what point did you think this is sort of my thing? This is like, I want to do something with this.
You know, I think I was just naturally drawn to it. I do remember, unfortunately, being in school and my mathematics teacher saying to me, "Oh goodness, you're nothing like your brother." And like total, you know, insult. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not. It's, you know, I'm not like him. So it was just, I was never interested in that side of things. I was always interested in the art side. It was just ingrained in me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's, I think from what's at high school, we'd be freshmen when you get to choose your classes. I went down the route of all the art classes at that point. Yeah.
And so when you are want to get into a career, I want to do something, you know, professionally, is art at the forefront of your mind? Are you thinking this is something that I want to go down? Or are you,
you know, no. And to be honest with you, it wasn't. I think you leave school. Well, I don't know. I think a lot of people think, and I did this to my own daughter, when you finish high school, people just assume you know what you want to do. And the reality was I had no idea. I was interested in art and in journalism, but there was nothing that was screaming out to me, this is where I needed to go. So I think
journalism, like writing for a newspaper or news or something? Or
it was for a newspaper. I did work experience as a senior with a newspaper, and I was very interested in that. That was probably the direction I was wanting to go, but I wasn't completely convinced of that. But during that time, actually with the newspaper, a job did come up as a graphic reproducer, which my mother at the time, she's going, you need to apply for this. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'll apply for it. But I thought for sure they wouldn't take me on because I had been there as a journalist with that mentality to take that route. But
So what do you think appealed to you about journalism?
Telling a story, telling people's story.
Hmm.
And I think I look at journalism now and it's changed a lot. I think all the industries have changed quite a bit from back then. But
for the better or for the worse?
I think mainstream for the worst. I think better in that we have podcasts, we have YouTube, we're able to get a broader view of the world and what's going on. Whereas like growing up in country Queensland, Richard will tell you, we probably had 3 or 4 channels on the television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're limited to what we received as far as news. But the communities there, they revolve around like the newspaper, the news.
So it was journalism and the newspaper was sort of a bigger part of life.
Yeah.
Where you grew up in, at, you know.
Oh,
in your environment where you were.
Yeah, and I loved media, of whether it be print media, television, you name it. I was interested in all, and photography. Like when you take on graphic reproduction, it's an industry that fell by the wayside when everything went digital, but pretty much it was like a study of color and light and reproducing colors. So it's that ability and it's such a, you can't reproduce what we're seeing with the natural eye onto a piece of paper. But in graphic reproduction, you're doing the best you can to make that reproduction.
So what was that practically? Like someone who's doing graphic reproduction, what are you actually doing?
Back then, you would be splicing film together. You would, it was like now when there's someone printing like the wallpaper, for instance, you're printing in CMYK, which is cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. So when you're looking at a picture, you have to break it down into those 4 colors to reproduce it. And when you're doing that, sometimes some colors don't reproduce as well as others. So when you're looking at a computer screen, it's usually an RGB. So you're taking 2 different forms of how color's represented, and then you've got to change it and then put it in a print. Exactly what's happening with the wallpaper. So it's, yeah, it's making sure that if you paint a picture, that when that picture goes onto the wallpaper, or whether it's in a book or whatever, it is representing the original artwork as best as possible. And you're breaking it down. And I think I remember probably the first week that I went to study it, they broke it down into white light. And it had never really occurred to me until that day that white light was made up of all the colors. And I'm thinking, you know, I wasn't particularly scientific. So that to me was amazing, that it's, you're seeing colors when one color's removed. White light is all the colors together. So it helped me in understanding how you're reproducing and the study behind photography. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because like they say, black is technically no color and white is every color.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And you'd think it'd be the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'd think like something, like the more color you add to it, maybe it would get darker and darker.
You're
and
thinking
darker
paint. Yeah. Paint. Yeah. And not light. Yeah.
Interesting. So what do you think it was, you know, because you said your mom said you had to go for this job.
Oh,
and you were into journalism.
She knew.
Did she see the creative aspect of you and be like, in the wrong industry, you need to be going over here? Or?
Yeah, I think she could see me in either, but she knew that, you know, mums know. Mums just know. And she knew.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
You were mentioning in journalism, the thing that appealed to you is the storytelling.
Mm.
And storytelling is such a primal thing in humanity. I can see in your designs, in your wallpaper designs, there is a storytelling aspect. And I, now that you're mentioning about your interest in journalism and particularly telling stories, I can see how this may be a through line from your interest in journalism to your art that you go in to create. But you say your mom knew, your mothers know, and your mom knew you needed to go down this other path.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you go from doing that graphic work?
At
what point did you start creating your own work outside of, you know, your profession?
I was, when I was working as a graphic reproducer, the guy that I worked with closely, he was a very good photographer, and I ended up buying a lot of his photographic equipment as he updated. I took his hand-me-downs, which were great. I started delving really deep into photography, and for a long time, which is weird actually to think that I kind of veered away from that now, but during that time, that was my creative outlet, was the photography. And when we moved to California, I entered the San Diego State Fair, not the State Fair, the San Diego County Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Their photography competition. And I think I had 4 or 5 pieces picked for display, which was my first time ever entering it. And it was a guy in San Marcos, I believe, that said, you know, you should enter these. And I'm like, really? And I was I think my son had just been born, and I was watching the television, a news broadcast, and they were standing in front of my photo. One of the photos that I'd submitted was on TV, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they've chosen one. So that was exciting for me. But
so prior to that, you had never done anything professionally with photography. You just loved photography, and I assume you were taking lots of photos, and then you just sort of, on somebody's advice, entered your stuff in, and you're already getting recognized.
Yeah. And I have hundreds of, like back then, you know, everything was film. And in graphic reproduction, you learn how to print photos. So I was very much into the black and white Kodak film and paper. So, yeah, I did that for years. And I think only when children came along, I kind of veered away from that because things changed to digital, for one, and life gets busy with with kids. But yeah, I went into more graphics, and as far as changing from actually working for myself, it was really when we moved to the US that that kind of opened up for me to think, okay, I'm going to start this for myself. And I started with a few clients in San Diego, and it just moved on from there.
But what were you doing exactly? Because I can see that I'm just following kind of the storyline here. You have you're sketching and drawing as a kid. You go into journalism, then you go into graphic reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
What point do you start designing your own designs?
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look back at it. I'm like, how did that go? I started working with a fellow Australian, and we were working with fabrics coming in from Europe. And a lot of the companies that we were working with, and this is the interior design part that really interested me as well. A lot of these companies that we were bringing in promoting the goods, when they realized that there was a market here, they would come in and, you know, promote themselves, and they really didn't need us. And I'm thinking the only way to really be a step ahead is to be designing your own collections. And so that's how that started. And that was, I want to say, back in 2011, 12, that I started designing patterns.
For fabric.
And it takes a while to find your feet as to what style is your style. And I'm mm-hmm. still playing with that to this day. And that's when it comes back to the storytelling. It's like, there are certain times in your life and you think, yes, this can represent that. Like, for instance, we just came back from a trip to Italy, and the next collection I'm working on is Italian flavored. So it's like, I want to represent that trip. I saw so many amazing things. So it's like,
you can definitely go there and get inspired. That's for sure.
Yeah. Everywhere you look. So it's like when you have an experience, it is the storytelling you want to represent it. But, it depends on the mood. It's depends on my mood as to what comes out. But I think with everything changing, because I still have my original watercolor set, which looks disgusting. It's well used, but I still have it. There's colors in there that I'll still pull on. But I have not touched that, to be totally honest with you, in 3 years, because everything has moved over to digital for me.
Yeah.
I still have artwork, folders and folders of original artwork that I will flip through and get inspired to revisit, like as a jumping off point for something. I'm thinking, yeah, I haven't quite seen that piece through yet. I'll revisit it. But I'll revisit it now in a more digital format.
Gotcha.
So, and it just makes my life easier that I can be, like when we're away in Italy, I was still doing drawing on my iPad because technology has allowed me to do that.
Did you find the transition difficult, or is it something that you picked up pretty easily?
I did not like it in the beginning at all. There is something very different about using a paintbrush and a stylus on a screen. And mind you, with the technology, there's so many brush types and whatnot that you can play around with, but it is never the same as picking up a paintbrush. I had a difficult time at first trying to find what was me, and I'm still learning that. And you'll see that with the next collection that's come out, I've kind of taken it a step further. But it just opens up. It opens up a world that I didn't have access to before. Whereas you can layer. It's the layering, I think, that digital technology gives you that traditional art does not. So it's interesting in that way, because when I was away, I was taking lots of photographs that I could refer back to for bits and pieces. So yeah, it really does open up possibilities.
Yeah.
And it's just finding your feet in it. And it, I don't think you ever really do. I think you're constantly evolving in that respect.
Yeah. Well, I guess you have to adapt, right?
You know, someone said that to me years and years ago when we changed from traditional graphic reproduction to digital. And they said, you have to adapt and go with it. Same with any company.
Yeah.
You have to adapt to technology or you're left behind.
Yeah.
So you choose, this is what I want to stay in, and then you adapt and stay current. It's
now,
work.
I noticed on your website, so you have the Beverly Bungalow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's primarily focused on fabrics, right?
Correct. Correct.
Now, there's sort of an ethos for the Beverly Bungalow that's very all about sustainability and printing to order, like, you know, creating to order, not having excess stock, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Could you speak a little bit to that?
The Beverly Bungalow began when we moved to Arizona. And it was pretty much based on this little desert oasis that we lived in. When it comes to sustainability, I don't like seeing waste mm-hmm. of any description. And even like when it comes to recycling, Americans don't realize, you know, our recycling bins are very big and it sounds so silly. You've got a very big recycling bin. In Australia, it's like a quarter of that size. You don't have that much recycling and you might take it out every second week. Whereas here, our recycling bin is full every week and it's just excess packaging, excess waste.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that, is like a line in the sand that I do not want to cross. I just want to make sure that we have as little impact as possible. And we're trying to obtain zero waste. That's our aim. It's a work in progress, but that's where what we're aiming for. So printing digitally is the way that we are set up. So we're.
Was there like a realization moment? Was there anything that struck you that said, this is the way that I want to go, or I don't want to make sure I don't do it this other way? Was there, what brought you to that frame of mind?
Two things, really. It was the industry prior to digital technology coming into fabrics and wallpapers. I mean, digital wallpapers are relatively fairly new in the big scheme of things. So previously when you'd purchase fabrics from overseas, you might be purchasing a roll of between 50 and 100 meters. And you're holding stock and you hope it sells. It may not. So holding stock, there's a lot of gambling in holding stock. So what would happen if we had leftover stock? We'd donate it to charities. Usually the main one that we would donate to was the fabric was being sent to Haiti for women there to remake the fabric into articles that they could resell,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. I mean, I'm happy, very happy to partake in that. However, it's like that's one degree that you can donate. There's a lot of other waste. So it hurts me to see waste. And I think when my daughter was going through high school, because the US is not particularly strong with school uniforms, whereas Australia you are. So it was never thought of what you would wear to school. You know, every beginning of every school year, it was like you'd get sized up for your school uniform. Whereas here it was, because there was not a school uniform, it was a constant fashion parade. It was constantly mm-hmm. buying clothes, and it was, you know, the whole fast fashion industry that's here, that, you know, there's a place for everything. But then when you see what happens when, you know, every season it gets donated and then you see it being shipped overseas, and I'm thinking, this is, it's just woeful waste.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that was like a big wake up call for me. And I'm like, nope. So I'd rather, our philosophy is that we'd rather, you know, spend more on a quality item than partake in the fast fashion. And it's across the board, whether it's food, you know, we buy organic, we're very particular about what we eat and what we consume overall. So it's, we're very aware of our impact.
Yeah.
And we want to partner with other companies that are also aware of their impact. So, right. So yeah, Milton Keynes are a great partner in that respect.
So now your brand that you're using to create the wallpaper designs
mm-hmm.
is La Semilla Casa, right? Correct. So that's a brand within the Beverly Bungalow. Is that
correct? How you would... Yes.
Now, so what is La Semilla Casa? Where does that name come from, and what does it mean to you?
It has a lot to do with a couple of the patterns that are in this collection, the Haven collection that we're releasing with Moulton and Keynes. La Semilla Casa is, we're keeping La Semilla as a name for a couple of things. One is the label for ready-made, so which includes the wallpaper. But so La Semilla is the seed. It's like the inspiration, the seed, mm-hmm. and Casa is, of course, the house. It was going to be La Semilla de la Casa, which is the seed of the house. Mm. But it's the seed of inspiration. It's the seed of growth. It is where creation comes from, creativity. It's that first little inkling that gets you started.
Mm-hmm. Now the so under La Semilla Casa, this wallpaper collection, you're calling it the Haven Collection.
Correct. Yeah.
Now it looks like you have, I think it's 13 designs. And the designs really do range from floral to tropical to very geometric and subtle and that sort of thing. Was there a theme that sort of runs through the whole collection that makes it the Haven Collection?
Well, for one, there is quite a range that is seen in the Haven Collection. And that is, we've picked from, I think, four of our collections. So usually under La Semilla, we have floral collection, Jubilee, the tropical, Sonoran, different collections that we've just taken a bit from each of those collections to make up the Haven Collection. But I think the one print in the Haven Collection that started it all was the Barney print, the floral, the more traditional floral.
Yeah, I noticed you have Barney Vintage, Barney mm-hmm. Fields, and Barney Joy, and yep. they're all florals.
Very similar, yeah.
So where does the design for the Barney designs, where does that come from? Why is it called Barney's, and what are the differences between the three?
Barney Fields and Barney Vintage, no, sorry, Barney's Joy and Barney's Vintage, very similar. One is just stronger, more definite colors. The Vintage obviously is a more worded down, subtle colorway. And mm-hmm. Fields is a smaller print, more of a wildflower look. That was my first print that, you know, has been tucked away, and this is the first time it's been released. But I started working on that print in, I'd say, January 2021.
Okay.
Yeah. I had been diagnosed with cancer at the end of 2020, and it was a couple of years going through the treatment and reconstruction, because I had a double mastectomy. I had breast cancer, and my husband had bought me an iPad Pro so I could keep drawing at that time, just to keep myself occupied. Barney, the flowers that are a part of the Barney collection, were the first things that came out from that. So, yeah, it's been tucked away, and finally it's seen the light of day, and I'm very proud that it's coming out with Milton & King, another Australian company. It just seems like it was fated meant to be. But
so this first design came from the result of you dealing with something very traumatic and serious and, well, life-threatening.
Yeah, it's something I haven't really spoken about. It's not something that I ever made public. So talking to you is kind of like the first time I'm speaking openly about it. But at the time, I went off all social media, didn't want to discuss it, just wanted to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was really, again, it's like people close to you know, and my husband knew that I had to keep being creative and, you know, the iPad. It's a bit of a joke in our family because my mother was a bit addicted to her iPad. But it really did open up that area where I feel that art really was my therapy, my way back to dealing with what I was going through. And it was of great assistance. So I always think like art therapy, anything like that, is so valuable. And I can speak from experience in saying it definitely helped me process. I think you process emotions through drawing, whether it is, you know, some people will work out and jog 20 miles and they'll mm-hmm. process while they're jogging or cycling. I was processing while I was drawing, and that was my memory. When I started drawing it, I just knew straight away it was for Barney, who was my grandfather, who passed away just after I was born. And he was a very well-known gardener in the city of Ipswich, and a very lovely man. From everything I've heard, he was a man's man. He was talented gardener, Mr. Green Thumb. Yeah, what can I say? He was the inspiration for that. So,
why do you think it was that, you know, you're going through this and you have your iPad and you just start creating? Why do you think that your grandfather was the first thing to come to your mind or to inspire you? What do you think? Because you would think, you know, as you're dealing with a cancer diagnosis, you're fighting this, and I'm wondering how does that become the first thing in your mind? How is it? You know what I mean?
I know, and it's like you even asking me it now. I'm thinking, yeah, how is it? I don't know. He was such a, having never met him, but everyone talking about him was this, he was this mystery in my life.
Had he always been on your mind prior to this? And was he always just a figure that was important in your family, and somehow this experience perhaps made you revisit his memory? Or was it just something that sort of came out of nowhere? And
it pretty much came out of nowhere. But my grandmother, who I was very close to, she was, I think, 2 weeks shy of turning 105. And we were moving back to Denver. And every time I would say goodbye to her, I would always be thinking, this is the last time. This is it. This is the last time I'm seeing
her. It's very heavy.
Yeah, and I had been going through this for like 20 years, thinking, you know, at 100, almost 105, I'm thinking, you know. And she really didn't want to be around anymore. She's kind of, oh, my friends are passing away and I'm still here, but I still, it was very, you know, and when she did pass away, it was like, yeah, you know, people, there's a different relationship, I think, with your grandparents to your own parents. It's a really special relationship. Yeah. But I think she kept his memory alive. In the things that she kept around the house, like there was some fretwork above doorways and she'd say, we're never changing that because Barney did that and that has to stay exactly as it was. So he was larger than life by never being there. But I always, you know, my mum used to, you know, say, if you ever want to speak to him, you just speak to him. He's always there. So I've always imagined him being around, even though he's not here. I imagine his spirit being with us.
Well, I can imagine him being very touched and proud of these three designs that you've made as a tribute to him. They're beautiful designs.
Thank you. Yeah. It's my little thank you to him. I think the fact that the interesting part was he was a gardener. My mother was a gardener. I'm a gardener. it's
So Scottsdale must be very frustrating for you.
You know what? the interesting thing about Scottsdale is come this time of the year, you know, in Denver, they're still, you know, clearing their driveways of snow. But in Scottsdale, we're planting petunias. So it's I do get some time of the year when I get to, you know,
tend to a garden.
Yeah. And yeah, and I think that's like speaking earlier about having the grass and going zero scape. It's a big thing for me to actually take the grass out and do a zero scape.
Because it almost seems like a family tradition to have a garden.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Even my younger brother, he sent me a picture of he'd mowed the lawn and he wanted me to see how beautiful his lawn looked. And I'm like, yep, we all have it. We all have this thing about gardening. And because I think you look at your house and it's like, yes, part of it's inside and the other half of your house is your outside. So, and being an Australian, that's always been a big part.
Before I move on to some of these other designs in the collection, are health-wise, are you okay now? Are you still dealing or?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And I've had an epiphany actually when we're away that.
In Italy
that my husband and I managed to get ourselves a cold each and we were buying things over the counter over there, which is very different to what you can buy over the counter here in the US. And I decided to come back and go off all of my medication. So I'm like, I'm going off it. And I'd gone off some of it straight away after diagnosis. They put you on medication. Actually, they had to put me on medication early because of COVID. But so anyway, I'm going off the medication and just taking my chances with just eating healthy, eating an organic diet and looking after ourselves. I just feel that I've lost both my parents. I've lost quite a few family members and friends. And a lot of the time it's been from, you know, sometimes you just are taking too many things. And I just feel that sometimes, for myself in particular, I've decided not to go that route and to just live life.
You needed a sort of a clean out and to just make sure you're filling your body with good things.
Yeah. And it's reading labels, you know, all of that. And it just being aware of what you're eating. And so that's the route we're taking. But I feel that with everyone, I think health is super important. And one thing I will say, though, in retrospect, is that you can go for tests up and down. I mean, I went this route, but you have to trust your own instinct. If you feel something's wrong, follow that instinct. And I had doctors telling me, I'm fine. You're good. Nothing's wrong. And I knew.
Oh, really?
yeah, I knew, I'm like, I know nothing. I know something's wrong. And it was just a matter of, I even went for a biopsy and they said, you're good. Nothing to worry about. And wow. It was wrong. So it's like, I think you have to trust your instinct. And
that's very powerful, because you would think getting the medical opinions and even a biopsy that clears you, you'd stop worrying, but somehow you still knew.
It was, initially it was like, yay, I'm good. This thing was a huge relief, but which is, and that's where you think, oh, I'm good, but really you're not. So it comes, yeah, it always comes down to that inner feeling, and you have to trust it. And a lot of the time we look to doctors and the medical industry as like having all the answers, and that's not always the case. So
they're just people.
Yeah. And people make mistakes, and you just have to listen to that inner voice that tells you, get a second opinion.
Now, I hope you don't mind me asking, how did you know? What were you feeling?
It was an ache. It was an ache I had. And like honestly, and I was thinking about this the other day, I'm like, thousands of women go through what I went through, thousands. And everyone is of a certain age, you know, you start going in for a mammogram. Had plenty of mammograms, had ultrasounds, had it all, and they could not pick it up. So it's like there was one doctor that did see something, and she goes, there is something not right here. So then I went to, I had to go see another doctor who was in our insurance group, and they said, no, there is nothing there. They're wrong. So I was relieved, but at the same time you're thinking, who do you trust? Who do you believe? So yeah. It was like during all of this time that COVID happened, and
a terrible time to be sick with anything else other than COVID.
Yeah. So it was a really hard year for us, because we had lost, my brother had lost his wife the same year to a battle with cancer. So it was a really crummy year. But again, she was fighting cancer for 5 years, and she knew at the end, you just have this knowing, you know. It's something you just have to follow through on. It's like I said, it's an inner voice, and you've got to trust your own inner voice. And sometimes you might have to change doctors, but I know that the doctors that I did find in the end, I was super happy with. I was very happy with the doctors that stepped forward and helped me through.
Yeah. Wow.
So just keep looking. And mine was a hunt, and it was funny actually, because my husband and I would go meet these surgeons, and we would walk out and go, he's not the one. He's not it.
And like, then you're dating.
Yes. You're interviewing for a job. Who's going to cut me open? It's something that people, you know, don't really talk about. People will talk about donating to, you know, a fund for breast cancer research or whatnot. That's as much as what's been discussed, but there's a lot more to it behind the scenes, like the emotional roller coaster, and having a modality like I had my art to delve into, which I'm super grateful for. It's and honestly, when I part of my treatment was to go through radiation, and you forget, it's like I'd be in the waiting room to go in for radiation, and there's all these guys there that are being treated for prostate cancer. So it's like, oh, and you'd get to know them and meet them, and it's interesting how many people are affected that
realize. It's great. I think it's great that you're speaking about it, because I think it may help a lot of other people kind of come to terms with, you know, getting checked out, or, you know, taking their health a bit more seriously. And also at the same time, being able to find things, whether it's, you know, fitness, or in your case, you know, creativity and art, as a way to, you know, process everything that you're going through and to create something good and positive out of a scary situation. So, I mean, in light of that, I'd like to get into everything else that you've created. Were all these, you know, we talked about the Barney's designs, mm-hmm. were all these other designs coming around the same time? Because I noticed you have, you know, there's a whole, like, a few designs here that are very tropical. You've got the cockatoo palms and the Havana banana, and you've got the Laguna palm, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. They're all very much, you can tell they're an ode to Queensland, Australia, with that tropical mm-hmm. vibe. Were these all sort of coming out at the same time as well as around the time when you're doing the Barney ones?
Barney was probably that and Havana Banana around similar time frame. Everything else is more recent. It's like the first, like, if looking at Barney in comparison to the rest of the collection, it is way more traditional than yes. anything else I have. And that would, you know, that's Barney pretty much. Apparently he was only ever seen in a suit and a hat.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's definitely something you look back on old photos and you see everybody dressed up in suits and hats and stuff, yeah. and you sort of miss it.
That was him. He had a suit and a hat and a pipe. He smoked a pipe. So
now everyone just sort of dresses in pajamas and hoodies.
I know. It's which is interesting because, you know, going to Italy, it's completely opposite. I think Americans were very casual living mm-hmm. here. And over there, it's like, you know, it's nice to get dressed up occasionally, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the most traditional. The others are, you know, they're little odes to everybody. Like I mentioned, we lost my sister-in-law, Natalie, to cancer, and seagrass was for her. She loved the ocean and she loved being outside. So that was an ode to Natalie. The lattice was mm-hmm. an ode to my dad, who loved gardening as well. And the cockatoo palms as well. That was, the cockatoos have a special significance with him. And he loved his palms, as did my mother. But I always, when I do the fabrics, I always try and make a storyline with each print. Mm-hmm. So, like in this instance, I would put the moon waves with mm-hmm. the Havana banana. I would match the Mojave Village with the Barney. I would pair them off. So it's like I like the look of, like, say you might do a bedroom in the Barney and then do the bathroom in the Mojave Village. I like being able to look from one room into the next room and seeing the story continue, but not the same wallpaper.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you've made them so that they could kind of fit together.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I do the fabrics, it's usually three. It's usually it'll be a floral or a tropical print with an accent print with a stripe.
Mm-hmm.
So we have lots of stripes to marry with everything. And when this is released, I think we're looking at the 22nd of February. The fabrics that go with these prints will be available as well. So
great. Yeah. So you can go to your website, Beverly Bungalow, and get a matching fabric to one of the wallpapers.
Yeah. Not everything will be up there, but a good selection from this Haven collection you'll find. But
it's so great that you have, like you said, a tribute to your sister-in-law, you've got so many stories that you tell with these different designs, or at least where they come from.
Mm.
Tell me a little bit about the Mojave Village one. It's very, very much seems like Native American sort of pattern to it. Village.
Yeah, completely different to the others as well. So this is like anyone looking at it will think, oh my gosh, this is such a hodgepodge, but it is, it's just a snippet of a larger collection that we have. Mojave Village was a tribute to my husband's grandmother, who was a Native American.
Okay.
And we knew that she was Native American. But recently we did the ancestry.com testing.
Okay.
On my daughter's request. So we all sent in our samples and it came back with our percentages and it just confirmed everything. So I think now we're going, not myself obviously, but my husband and my children are going back to do there's a Native American DNA test you can do to give you even more information.
Wow. So your husband from Japan had Native American ancestry?
Yes, his mum was Japanese and his dad was, his mother was American Indian and his father immigrated out from Madrid, Spain. Wow. So they were in New Mexico. So when you look at the ancestry, there's a big group of Spanish settlers that came out to New Mexico. And that's where he met his Native American wife.
Wow.
So,
and yeah. So that's what went into the Mojave Village design.
Yes. And there is more to that series as well, which we'll slowly bring out as time goes on. But yeah, there's, and I think it's just showing respect to the heritage. It's, like Barney obviously is from my grandfather, but our family is, you know, we're made up of.
You're complex.
A little bit of everything, which I think is great. And it, it's nice, I feel, that really broadens your view on our planet pretty much.
And, yeah.
And it's like accepting of other people.
This collection is a little bit of everything too. And I think that's definitely reflects your thoughts there. You have, you know, you go from florals, you have these sort of geometrical patterns, but I really love how the colorways you've chosen are very, they'll really work with people who sort of love neutrals and subtlety. The ones that have sort of the blue or the purple or lavender hues to them, so there's color. So they're not all just gray and white or something. So there's color, but the colors are very easy on the eyes, I guess what I'm trying to say. Was that sort of in keeping with your sort of aesthetic that you have across your fabrics as well?
Very much so. Very much so. I tend to be more on the subtle level. Everything is, sometimes I need to make sure that I put enough depth into the colors that they can actually be seen. Sometimes they're so pale, they're just there. But I've had friends look at them, and one friend in particular, she dislikes black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, whereas I need something that has more oomph. So I'm always thinking of her when I'm thinking, okay, I usually start with something that's really bright. And then as I work with something, I'll tone it down. And the colorways that you're talking about, they're pretty standard across the board. Like the Stella, which is like a gray blue, the Rhea, which is like a vintage gold, very subtle vintage gold, and the greens, which is fern, and the dew and the blush. It's subtle because I feel that not everyone wants bright and bold, and not everyone wants a plain white wall.
Right.
So
It really works because there's enough color in these, but they're just, it's not so stark. It's not so overly saturated. It's desaturated a bit to where you have the colors without going too crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking at Mrs. Jones, the chevron, and the southern sky. And they were.
I love the southern sky. That's one of my favorites, which is, a design that's very different from anything else in this Haven collection.
That was one of my more recent ones, the southern sky, because when I went back, I think it was in between my mother and my father passing away. My brother and sister-in-law have a house in the Bunya Mountains, and I would often stay there. And it's one of the places in the world where you get the most beautiful view of the Milky Way and of the Southern Cross. Hmm. And that came about from my stays there. And you've been the southern night sky is different to the northern nights, in the northern hemisphere, what we see here. Both beautiful, but I think we get a better view of the Milky Way in the southern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's that one. But again, it's like it's very monochromatic, that print, compared to like the Barney, which is more colorful. So there's a big, there's a little, I've tried to make it so there's a little bit of something for everyone.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that this is from your stay when you were, what you said, you're staying with your brother or what you said in the mountains there, who were you staying with?
A lot of the time I was there, I was by myself. But mm-hmm. it's my sister-in-law and my brother's house at the Bunya Mountains. Okay.
So the question that I was going to ask was, you have all these designs and there's so much story and narrative built in to the designs. Have you shared them with I'm sure your husband knows and your kids probably know, they've probably seen you create them and as you're doing it, but sort of does your extended family and your siblings, are they aware of these designs? Have they seen them yet? Have they had any sort of feedback? Cause I would imagine, that you'd be sort of flattered to be included in.
They these designs. Really don't know.
Well, they're about to.
It's going to be a surprise for them. My older brother has an idea, but I haven't shared with him the story behind any of it. And that's kind of like it's something that is being seen for the first time, this collection. And it's been a long time coming. And I'm not that person that can talk about it. It's like I talk through the artwork. It'll mm-hmm. be like this, talking to you is the most I've discussed it.
Yeah.
It's just, it is very personal. But then I look at, people will look at, everyone will see something different, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to be shared and everyone will see something different.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's,
Well, as an artist, I'm sure you want, you love it when people can kind of put their own, their own impressions on something or their own sort of story into something and have it mean whatever it's going to mean to them. But it is really interesting to hear from the artist yourself, the seed of where these designs came from and whether it was the person that inspired it or the event that you were going through that spawned, an appreciation for something or conjured a memory that ended up in this, in these beautiful prints. I think it's exciting for everyone to hear where it all comes from. Ultimately, when people put these on their walls in their homes, they're going to take on their own stories and their own new meanings. But I think it's
totally,
it's a really, really great collection. I'm actually very, very excited for it to be released. I think people are going to love it and I can't wait for everyone to see it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure talking with you today and discussing everything, even though it's not something that I've I've really spoken about, but yeah, I'm proud of it as well. Looking at it, and then I can't wait for it to be released and see what people think.
Well, I can tell you're a very private person, and you don't really talk about this stuff very often. So I'm very grateful that you spent over an hour with me talking about everything. And I hope we can connect on the other side of this collection being released. Because you said you're working on something new, right? Even though this hasn't been released yet, or it's just about to be released, you're already working on new designs.
Yes, I've just finished the next collection. Yeah.
How many designs are in that collection?
About 10.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
So the creativity is still flowing.
It does not stop. It's like a tap you cannot turn off.
Yeah. That's such a good thing. Yeah. And we all get to benefit from that tap flowing.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your time today, Chris. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thanks, Allison. You have a good day.
You too, Chris. Thanks so much.